of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio. It's my
Welcome, this is Dr. Maria Salas, and you are listening to Positively Healthy. Today, I am going to give this show over to the amazing, hardworking hero, Dr. Brian Hooker, assistant professor from Simpson University, continuing the discussion from last interview. Last interview, he touched on the CDC whistleblower. Well, that CDC employee was finally exposed end of August. I think it was like August 26th through 29th. Something like that. Dr. Hooker presents the facts here. Thank you, Savannah.
Anyhow, if any of you have been following the news recently, you may have heard that there is a whistleblower from the CDC. That whistleblower has recently made a public statement, but I wanted to give you some background information before I jump into my slides. A little bit about me. I am a biochemical engineer. I have worked in the biotech industry for longer than I really, really care to remember. But I have an affected child. I have a 16-year-old who was injured by his infant vaccines, specifically, most profoundly, his 15-month vaccines, and he descended into a world of neurodevelopmental disabilities. He's 16 years old. He is a joy. His name's Steve. He's the light of my life and my wife's life. My wife, we had the opportunity for her to work at home with him, and he is nonverbal and has had significant medical ailments. I love the fact that this is such a community of advocates to help our children, and I've learned a lot. I've had to be in and out because there are a lot of things swirling around, you know, obviously for me professionally right now. But I've been involved in advocating for vaccine safety and looking at potential fraud and malfeasance in the CDC since 2002. Oddly enough, I had my first conversations with the whistleblower in 2002, where he was delegated as the person at the CDC that I, as a scientist, would interact with. I had some scientific discussions with them, and over the process of months, then the scientific discussions, I was getting a little bit closer and closer to things that they were very, very uncomfortable about relaying to me, and I was asking more and more pointed questions. Specifically at that point regarding thimerosal, the mercury-containing preservative in vaccines, and autism. In 2004, the CDC suspended all conversations with me. They said that I was suing them because I was a participant in the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and so the CDC attorneys told CDC scientists, including the whistleblower, and I can reveal his name now because his name has already been revealed, Dr. William Thompson. So my correspondence with the CDC at that point only existed in what I could obtain via the Freedom of Information Act. And since that time, I've submitted about 100 or so Freedom of Information Act requests to the CDC. I've worked with two congressional representatives on congressional requests and have literally tens of thousands of pages of documents that we've obtained in the background from the CDC. Now, lo and behold, it's okay. This really says it all. And it's very, very difficult to read, so I'm going to read it for you. It says, and this is Dr. Thompson's personal notes. Dr. Thompson found an effect. He found that the timing of the MMR vaccine was critical regarding the incidence of autism in African Americans. Okay. He found this effect in 2001. Okay. The first time that this effect was seen was November 7th, 2001, and I actually have the meeting notes where this was brought up. His own results showed that African Americans that received the MMR on time, he had not looked at males versus females at this point, but was looking at African Americans as a whole. His own notes showed that African Americans that received the MMR on time, anywhere between 12 and 18 months, were about 2.5 times more likely to receive an autism diagnosis versus those African Americans where they waited on getting the MMR vaccine until after 36 months. Okay, Dr. Thompson had a problem, okay? And very, very quickly, after that revelation came forward, the co-authors of the paper, Dr. Tanya Basin, Dr. Colleen Boyle, Dr. Marshall and Jürgen Alsop, and Dr. Frank DiStefano colluded to figure out methodologies in order to bury that particular effect. So when the final publication did come out, it showed that there was no relationship and purported no relationship between the timing of the MMR vaccine and autism in African Americans. Okay. Now, before the paper came out, Dr. Thompson was asked to present his results at the 2004 Institute of Medicine meeting. This is just to give you some background. This is a real seminal meeting in terms of what the government's position was on vaccines and autism. This meeting was hastily called in 2004 by the CDC at the CDC's request to the Institute of Medicine to revisit epidemiological and biological studies regarding the Marisol and autism, as well as the MMR vaccine in autism. Dr. Thompson, knowing full well that there was an effect that was seen with African Americans literally a week and a half before the IOM presentation, was agonizing in his own personal notes, and he said, "What should we do about the race effect? It shows a large effect for blacks and no effect for whites." Okay? And this is the timing of the MMR vaccine in African Americans. Okay. Now, when the paper came out, okay, incidentally, Dr. Thompson was not allowed to give that presentation. Okay, he was replaced by Dr. Frank DiStefano. The results were never reported, and when the final publication came out, then results were, using very, very dubious statistics, were diluted down so there was no relationship with African Americans. Okay, and here is the header from the publication. This came out in the journal Pediatrics in 2004. Age of first measles, mumps, rubella vaccine in children with autism in school matched control subjects, a population-based study in metropolitan Atlanta. Okay, and their conclusion was that they did see a small effect in all children. When they looked at all children that were vaccinated before 36 months versus after 36 months, there was about a 50% greater incidence in autism. But they dismissed this and they said, oh, well, these children got diagnosed with autism before and they just had to get their vaccinations. They had to get their MMR shot on time so they could participate in early intervention programs in the state of Atlanta. Okay? Completely dismissing the fact that what they actually found was this effect was only in African Americans. When I did my analysis, which I'll discuss in just a minute, I found that it was only in African American males, and it would be ludicrous to say that that particular race gender group rushed out and got its vaccines early and the rest of because quite honestly, when you look at white males, when you look at white females, and you look at African American females, that effect is not there. It is only in African American males. Okay, so through the guidance of Dr. Thompson, I was encouraged, and he actually showed me a very, very simple method in order to obtain these data from the CDC. Now, we had tried to go, and I had actually worked with Mark and David Geyer for many years, going into the vaccine safety data link in order to, this is a large CDC repository of vaccination and medical records for three HMOs, primarily on the West Coast. We had tried to get this information, but Dr. Thompson shared with me a very, very simple way that I could get the data specific to this particular paper. Okay, I requested the data in December. I received the data in January of 2014, and I proceeded to do the reanalysis. And anybody Anybody can get the public use data set. If you want to talk to me after the presentation, I can show you how you can get the public use data set. And that is available for the public by law. It is guaranteed by law because these publications and these studies have the force and effect of law regarding vaccination guidelines, and so these data by law have to be made public. Okay, so I reanalyzed the data sets using what's in a very, very simple statistical technique. I think in statistics, simplicity is elegance. So I did the simplest, most straightforward analysis, which is a chi-squared analysis, where you categorize individuals based on whether they received an autism diagnosis and when they actually received the MMR vaccination. Okay. I also CDC used a little bit more esoteric method called conditional logistic regression. And that particular method, I felt like in some ways was suitable. And because they used this particular method, I wanted to make sure that while I was doing my statistics, that I exactly repeated the CDC's analysis. I wanted to know what did they get, when did they get it. Okay. And if I look at all children in this study, there's lots of numbers here. Total cohort, that's the total population. If we look at an age cutoff of before or after 18 months, 24 months, we did not see a statistically significant effect. This is odds ratio. This basically means that children that got the MMR before 18 months were 1.11 times more likely to have an autism diagnosis. But I have this thing called a p-value. And if that p-value is greater than 0.05, then it's not statistically significant, and we cannot rely on that particular result. Okay, same thing at 24 months. The odds ratio goes up a little bit further, but still we haven't attained statistical significance. But then at 36 months, I replicated. The CDC said that odds ratio was 1.49. It got exactly the same answer as the CDC. This is the result that they dismissed due to early immunization programs for children that needed preschool intervention in the state of Atlanta. Okay, now if I look at males only, the effect goes up even further. So now the odds ratio is 1.69, or 69% more likely for those that got the MMR vaccine before 36 months of age. Now, but the effect was not in females. Okay, so I did not see the effect in females, but I want to probe a little bit deeper, a little bit further. And so I looked at African American children only. Okay, I reduced the size of the study population. Incidentally, this is a study that was done using children that were born between 1986 and 1993 in the metropolitan Atlanta, five school districts in metropolitan Atlanta. Okay, there was about 40% African Americans in the entire study, with a significant number of autism cases, as well as what we call case match controls, controls that would represent the same conditions where they were seeing the autism cases. Okay, now when I look at African Americans, at 36 months, I get this odds ratio of 2.3 times more likely. It is statistically significant. Remember that cutoff, the p-value for significance, which means that at this point means that it's 99% probable number that African Americans in general were seeing more autism when they were vaccinated before 36 months versus after. Now, the thing that astounded me is when I looked at males, now I have statistically, in red, I have statistically significant results for those that got the MMR before or after 24 months, so even earlier, and a whopping 3.36 times more likely in African American males that got the MMR on time versus those that got the MMR after 36 months of age. So this was a very huge statistically significant effect. I got on the phone with a whistleblower, told him the results. His immediate reaction was, oh, you found it. You found the association. Okay. And now I probed a little bit deeper. In terms of females, no effect. Okay, this effect was reserved. In fact, the effect for African American males was so strong that when we looked at the total cohort, if I go back a slide, it was driving the effect throughout. okay, this was reserved to African American males. It was so strong in African American males that we saw even an effect when we looked at all children. But indeed, it was only happening in this particular population. So the CDC had a problem. Excluding African American children, okay, when I looked at the category of whites and other races, statistically significant results. Okay, there was nothing there, males, females. Okay, so I knew that there was a stark effect that was for African Americans only, or African American males only. I want to exclude low birth weight children, so I looked, and in the study I did not have any low birth weight children, but I did have some children who did not have birth weight records. So I tossed out all the children that had no birth weight records. Now, when I did that, I did not have a large enough group of individuals to evaluate at 36 months, so I had to look at 31 months. Okay, I wanted to make sure that I had at least 5 autistic children represented in this after 31 months of age vaccination. I still got a very strong, statistically significant effect, now 2.64 times more likely. So even if I jettisoned those children where I did not have their birth weight on record, I was still seeing a strong statistically significant effect. And I asked the whistleblower, what did you do? And he said, I can't disclose that conversation. I cannot tell you what happened in that conversation. I said, well, where are the notes? There are no notes. Okay, there are no notes. So what happened? We buried the results by making sure that when we looked at the race category, we only looked at those individuals that had a valid state of Georgia birth certificate. Okay. Why? Because that was a smaller sample. Why? The result went away. Why? Silence. No good reason. There's no good reason why. And when I can say that when my paper in translational neurodegeneration came out, the whistleblower felt relieved. Okay? This had been weighing on Dr. Thompson's conscience for many, many years. Okay? But over 13 years since the, or almost 13 years since the original result was found. Okay, so the CDC has a problem on its hands. Okay? Now, subsequently, there was a lot of backlash regarding the article that I had published in the journal Translational Neurodegeneration, and they claimed that I did not report a conflict of interest in terms of the funding that I received from the group Focus Autism, who funds my research. They were concerned because I am a board member of Focus Autism, but I also receive funding from Focus Autism. I felt like I was very, very clear regarding my disclosure when I submitted this article back for peer review in April. It went through a very rigorous 4-month peer review, but now it's been temporarily suspended for more scientific evaluation. Okay, I don't know if it's going to be reinstated. I don't know if it will, when it will be reinstated, but I welcome the scientific inquiry, and I want more people, more independent scientists. I'm not independent. Okay, I can't claim independence because I have an affected child. Okay, I list that as a disclaimer in any of my presentations. So, but in order to be scientifically valid, we follow the peer review process. So I welcome the inquiry, okay? I know, you know, I stand by my results. I stand by my statistical analysis, okay? And the same day that my paper was taken down temporarily from the journal where it was originally published, Dr. Thompson came out with a statement, okay? It had been revealed earlier that week that there was a CDC whistleblower. It had also been revealed earlier that week the name of the CDC whistleblower. But this is the first time that through his attorney, Dr. Thompson made a statement. And I'll just read this a little bit. My name is William Thompson. I'm a senior scientist with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, where I've worked since 1998. I regret that my co-authors and I admitted statistically significant information in our 2004 article published in the journal Pediatrics. The omitted data suggests that African American males who received the MMR vaccine before 36 months of age, or months, excuse me, were at an increased risk for autism. Decisions were made regarding which findings to report after the data were collected, and I believe that the final study protocol was not followed. See, the CDC comes up with a final study protocol before they do any statistics, before they do any analysis, before they have any meetings to discuss results. And they have to stick with that analysis, okay? Otherwise, then they could start to cherry pick data. And what they did in this case was they violated their own protocol in order to make sure that they absolved the MMR vaccine in this particular instance. Okay, then the rest is history. I was grateful that Dr. Thompson came out with this statement. It verified my results. It verified by a CDC scientific official. They saw the same effect in African-American males as I did. And he has stood by this particular statement. It, you know, goes on, talks about the benefits of vaccination. There are some issues regarding phone calls that I did record. For Dr. Thompson, I will say that I did record those phone conversations legally. And it was a very, very weighty decision made given the content of the phone conversations that, with Dr. Thompson and given the importance to the health of the children of the United States. This was not a decision that was made trivially or lightly to record a conversation with the government official regarding vaccination safety. Okay, so these are things that are done with trepidation, with much advice from legal counsel and friends and well-respected members of our community. Okay, now the CDC saw the same effect. Okay, these are this is the report from 2001, November 7th, 2001. Now, if we look at the 16 to 18 month category, this is the age where the children receive the first MMR vaccine, the odds ratio is 2.68. Now, they, instead of reporting this P value, this P statistic, they reported what's called CI, or confidence interval. If that confidence interval stays above 1, if the lower confidence interval stays above 1.0, then it's statistically significant. So obviously, their lower confidence in this result, 1.43 was above 1. Their higher confidence, 5.05. So they did see a statistically significant result as early as November 7th, 2001, and then proceeded to take this erroneous and actually very, very bad statistical method of putting a birth certificate constraint on specifically when they looked at the race category. Okay, so how did they make that result go away? Now, date of birth, autism diagnosis, and race were all based on school records. They did not need birth certificates to determine race of the individuals in the state of Georgia. They had this from school records. I have the raw data myself. I know when I look at the individuals, there are a few that are just a paucity where race is missing, but we took those out of the analysis. But you do not need a birth certificate to determine somebody's race. Okay, and it was listed right in the school record. Okay, now, not all participants in the study had valid state of Georgia birth certificates. In fact, about 40% did not. So the size of the statistical sample gets smaller. When a population size in statistics gets smaller, you lose significance, and our effect went away. Okay. But I can say emphatically, and even according to Dr. Thompson, birth certificate information was not required and was not even in the original protocol in order to run the race variable. In fact, the original protocol says that race is the only variable that can be run throughout the entire school record and not what they call the birth certificate cohort. Okay, so they violated their own protocol. CDC reported on race only for those individuals that had valid state of Georgia birth certificates. Okay. Dr. Thompson has acknowledged this. He also acknowledged that this was the lowest point in his career, that he was asked to cover up this information, and he was not able to get the presentation at the 2004 IOM meeting. I don't think he was physically available to violate his conscience at that particular point in time. And he regrets, and I'll say this directly, he regrets that his name is on that publication in the journal Pediatrics. Now, what happens when you remove those individuals from the cohort? Hey, here's all African Americans, okay? If I run my statistics This is before and after 36 months of age. I get 2.3 times more likely, this is boys and girls, okay? My 95% confidence interval doesn't dip down below 1. My p-value says that this is 99% accurate, 99%+ accurate, so this is a statistically significant result. However, if you only look at the individuals with a valid State of Georgia birth certificate, you lose, roughly about between 30 and 40% of the individuals. The odds ratio goes down, and you lose statistical significance. Problem solved. Okay, we don't have to report this particular result. Okay, now, for the rest of the talk, I want to talk about things besides the MMR vaccine. Okay, and I'm going to focus on thimerosal, the vaccine additive that was in many shots through the 1990s all the way up to the early 2000s, and now is in flu shots that are distributed nationwide for everybody, distributed for infants as well as given to pregnant women in any trimester of pregnancy. So I want to talk about thimerosal. This is a problem that obviously is near and dear to my heart. My son was very, very mercury toxic. In his infant and toddler years, we worked very, very hard using chelation, other types of therapies in order to get the mercury out of his system. And the only logical place that it would come from, this was not a kid that ate tuna fish, was from his thimerosal and his vaccinations. Now, the price at all 2010 study was supposed to be the final word on thimerosal. It's supposed to absolve thimerosal. There's no connection between thimerosal exposure and autism incidence and using the United States vaccine schedule. Okay. Now, this was a collaboration. It was between CDC and ADT Associates. They collaborated for over 8 years. There were millions of dollars transferred to ADT Associates. And they said that that they actually saw that more ethyl mercury, and I'm surmising this is a quotation, related to a decreased risk of the 3-ASD autism spectrum disorder. They were autism spectrum disorder, and regressive autism spectrum disorder. That's the three categories that they looked at. They said that it related to a decreased risk. In other words, if you got more thimerosal, then you were less likely to have a child with autism. Okay, more mercury is good for you. Wow. Okay. Now, but however, they had a phenomenon called overmatching. Okay. When they did their statistics, they looked at children that got virtually the same level of thimerosal as an autism case and as a control. Okay, that's like doing a study on nuclear radiation and looking at the incidence of cancer from all the people that got exactly the same dose of radiation. You can't do it. You can't correlate when you have a single number for an exposure variable. You cannot, in statistics, correlate that with anything. Okay, so overmatching meant that when they looked at the cases of autism, they were picking out controls that were the same age, year and month, same gender, same HMO, and in some cases got the shots at the same clinic. Okay, so they got the same levels of thimerosal. So overmatching rendered this statistically useless, okay, for postnatal effects. And the study was actually rejected by the Journal of American Medical Association and the New England Journal of Medicine before it was finally picked up in the Journal of Pediatrics. And the Journal of Pediatrics will basically publish almost anything that the CDC sends over. Also, this had a huge refusal, 65% refusal. Yeah. If the CDC asked you to participate in a study, okay. So this created a huge amount of selection bias because only 35% of those individuals polled were willing to go forward with the CDC study. Okay, and this is unacceptable in statistics. You really have to rethink your questionnaire, rethink how you're going to recruit participants, because if you have this low of a participation level, then there is probably a problem with your design. Okay. The cohort sizes were extremely small. Cohort is individuals with autism or autism spectrum disorder all the way to all the individuals in the study. They only looked at 49 children with regressive ASD total. Okay, this wasn't in categories in terms of thimerosal exposure, but for the total study, they only had 49 kids with regressive autism spectrum disorder. Okay, so how do you do a study with 49 children total? Okay, conflict of interest. Authors for this particular study were tied to Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, Sanofi Pasteur, and Wyeth, all vaccine manufacturers. Okay. Now, I was able to obtain the background reports from the PRIZE study. Okay, I got this through a congressional request. And the actual paper that appeared in the journal, this is the foreground, said that there was no statistically significant associations between thimerosal-containing immunizations and any of the ASD outcomes. Okay, but if you look at the background report, it said that prenatal exposure, okay, this was through the flu shot and through Rogam shots, Ro-IgG, that at the time still had thimerosal in it. It said that prenatal risk exposure of just 16 micrograms, remember there's 25 micrograms in the flu shot, 16 micrograms given to the mother led to a risk of regressive autism between 1.81 times all the way up to 8.73 times. Okay, that's huge. That's huge. Okay, would you read this if you were a pregnant woman and want a flu shot? Or want a relative who was pregnant to get their flu shot containing thimerosal? I don't think so. Okay, the paper also said that they saw no significant differences in the exposure outcomes between boys and girls for any of the ASD outcomes. Okay, that's not true. Actually, with males, in two of the three models, there was a statistically significant association. I used a more conservative p-value of 0.1. That meant 90% probability on the result between regressive ASD and males exposed prenatally. Okay. They also said that there was no evidence that increasing ethyl mercury exposure or thimerosal exposure from thimerosal-containing immunizations was associated with an increased risk of any of these categories, and that the unadjusted, okay, this is before they adjusted for some of what they call covariates, like maternal age, maternal education, things like that, they said that there was no significant association, but the background report again showed that significant associations were seen. They ran this model six different ways. In two of the six different ways, they saw associations where they had a very high p-value or very low p-value, which was statistically significant. And for all six models, when you use a p-value with more caution, meaning 90% probable, all six models ran showed that there was a significant association between prenatal thimerosal exposure and regressive autism. This is actually going through regression. What many of the families that are represented here have seen with their own wonderful special children regressed into the world of autism. Okay. And CDC was shown this information first in May of 2008. The following year, the same CDC scientists that were in charge of this study recommended flu shots for pregnant women, not only the seasonal flu shot, which contained 25 micrograms mercury, but you may remember the H1N1 scare in the late 2000s. Okay, they also recommended the 2009 H1N1 influenza shot that had another 25 micrograms of mercury. So instead of the 16 micrograms that was the basis for this study, pregnant women got three times as much. Okay, so it's all there. There's the math. 50 micrograms of mercury. Rabbit studies have shown that mercury given to pregnant female rabbits partitions through the placenta selectively. The majority of the mercury ends up in the developing fetus. Why would we want to do this? Now, like I said, the PRIZE manuscript was rejected by the Journal of the American Medical Association. And first reviewer said, it doesn't make sense that receiving the Marisol would be associated with a significantly decreased risk of autism. Thank you, Lord. Okay. The authors acknowledge this fact. Something is wrong. Okay. I doubted that controls would have a difference in exposure. They didn't. They were too closely matched. And the data bear out the skepticism. Okay. It was rejected by the New England Journal of Medicine, then it was finally published in Pediatrics. Okay. Now, when I reanalyzed this, I ran this as a more simple study. It's what's called a cohort study. Very simple, elegant method. And I looked at gender and birth weight categories only. Okay. The original study claims that it was a case control. It's not really a case control study. Their statistics were off. Okay, they did some things that were statistically, I wouldn't ding them too much about it, but they need to work on their vocabulary in the immunization safety office. Okay, and the analysis is shown without covariates. I want to know what happens when I run the data on thimerosal. I don't want to know what happens when I run the data on thimerosal and maternal age, maternal education, low birth weight, whether the child got antibiotics, this, that, and the other. Literally, there are over 100 covariates that they used to try to bury this analysis. Okay, so I wanted to find out what happens when you just look at the thimerosal. Okay, and the results were obtained for a large range of thimerosal exposure. You look at the mean thimerosal exposure in the group, and you do the two standard deviations below is your low exposure, two standard deviations above is your high exposure. Okay. And so what I found when I redid this study is I actually saw that prenatal thimerosal exposure. Now, a lot of these data, you can't argue, just because my p-values aren't below 0.05, you can't argue that there is not necessarily an effect there. Okay? Statistics don't prove negatives. They only prove positives. And when you prove the positive here, you see that there is an increased risk. It's 37%. But you have a statistically significant p-value for prenatal exposure looking at specifically at autism, not regressive autism, not autism spectrum disorder, but actual autism. Okay, I have much more to do. These are preliminary results. I haven't published this yet. In some days, you know, I'd like to say I had a full head of hair before I started this analysis. I didn't, but I really want to pull out the rest of the hair that I have when I look at this particular data set, because it's so thinly formed. Okay. So our results confirm that prenatal thimerosal is a risk factor for autism and ASD. Okay, at a minimum, CDC should have pursued these evidences further and banned thimerosal for pregnant women. It just makes sense. Mercury, neurotoxin, mercury, neurotoxin, mercury, statistically significant effects, mercury, minimata. I don't understand it. Okay, I'm missing something here. How can this particular form of ethyl mercury be deemed safe in the same atom, mercury, that causes so much oxidative stress and so much damage to the body? How can it just magically work and not have the same effect when you put it in a vaccination? And I think the entire cohort, we may have to throw out the study entirely and say, hey, we can't really prove anything definitively because of things like selection bias, because of things like the overmatching of data, the cases and the controls got the same levels of thimerosal, so we may not be able to get any publishable conclusions from this particular study. Now, let's talk about other neurological conditions. If CDC has known of high risks of autism, developmental delay, speech and language disorders, and non-organic sleeping disorders as early as 1999. Some unpublished abstracts by Dr. Thomas Verstraten have shown this and have shown astronomical risks, especially when looking at mercury obtained during the first month of life when children used to get the mercury-containing hepatitis B shot. Okay. CDC subsequently buried all the risk of these disorders using flawed statistics and out-and-out fraud. Okay, and I think we, as a community, we need to look at what questions we're asking. The CDC has come up with many, many dubious studies that say thimerosal doesn't cause autism. Okay, that's their playground. When they play Foursquare, they play the autism, you know, they play in the autism portion of the playground because they have many, many studies that they claim show thimerosal doesn't cause autism. But that's not really the question. The question for any type of biologic, any type of pharmaceutical, any type of vaccine is this safe to put in my body? Okay, should I be putting this in my body? Okay. So, according to CDC study, thimerosal doesn't cause autism. So they put it on their website. Whenever CNN wrote a report on the fact that my journal article was taken down temporarily, it's been a slow news day. Okay. They mentioned the whistleblower like in the fifth paragraph of the article, and then the whistleblower confirmed my results, but they gave it a tomato, tomato. But let's reframe the question. Is thimerosal safe to inject into my body or my infant's body? No! No! Okay. CDC studies show this. Okay, thimerosal causes tics. The whistleblower said it multiple times. He said it would be ridiculous to ever give thimerosal to a pregnant woman. Why would you ever do that? Okay. Thompson was a co-author on the Berio study from 2012. It says there's a smallest but statistically significant association between early thimerosal exposure and the presence of tics in boys. Okay, and if my child was going to get a vaccine that had a statistically significant association with tics, I wouldn't give it to him. You know, it's, you're not playing lotto with your kids. Oh, we'll just go to Vegas and play a little roulette with these vaccines. Could be tics, could not. He's a good kid. I bet it won't happen. You know, this is just not what you do with your wonderful children. Thompson, his own paper in 2007, a detrimental association with, there were other neurological conditions here, but I wanted to highlight motor and phonics tics according to the rating of the evaluators. These are evaluators that observe these children ticking, okay, having tics. More in the high thimerosal group and much more statistically significant. Okay. Andrews, 2004, same results. This was a study where the CDC played a role in deciding who got the funding. Okay. Verstraten, HMOA, saw a statistically significant association with tics as well as speech and language delay. Okay. Now, Berio, this was an interesting paper because it very strongly said that there was an association with thimerosal and tics in the original manuscript. But Thompson has said the CDC was not going to allow the original manuscript ever to leave the building. Okay, so it was drastically watered down. So Thompson gave me this. Here's Reviewer 1. And this embodies, I love Reviewer 1's comments because it embodies exactly what the CDC wants. Okay. The authors, i.e. the CDC, seem to be hoping for and wanting to demonstrate a lack of relationship. When a relationship does emerge, the authors essentially downplay it. Okay, doesn't that does describe our experience with the CDC? Okay, there's not really a relationship here. Even though it says it's statistically significant, trust us, there's not really a relationship. Okay, further, thimerosal is not a major causal agent for tic disorder, is not in accordance with their own data. And reviewer number 3, in general, arguments presented on page 13, this is where the tic finding was shown, that findings on the tic outcome variable were not seen as sufficiently persuasive to completely dismiss the findings. In other words, 5 publications, 5 CDC studies, thimerosal causes tics. And this is not acceptable. This is not something. By the way, tics are 4 times more prevalent in children with autism. Okay. And a lot of times, when your kid is stimming, you don't know if it's stimming or ticking. You don't know if it's voluntary or involuntary. My son has been diagnosed with tics. He's 16 years old, and he does have a tic diagnosis as well. Now, CDC claims that the Italian study that they funded, TOSI, shows that thimerosal doesn't cause tics. So we have, you know, CDC, whenever you ask them about tics, they hold up TOSI like, this doesn't cause tics. Okay, it was conducted in Italy. It was conducted on neurotypical children, not affected children, exposed to various levels of thimerosal. And CDC cites this as proof statistics don't get improved, by the way. Okay, that the Marisol doesn't cause tics. Even though we have four other studies that say that they do, this one is the magical study and somehow absolves the Marisol from tics. Okay, now if you look at the data here, you'll see that in each category, the top is motor tics, the bottom is phonic tics. I'm sorry, this is hard to read. In some ways, you know, I'm hoping these slides are going to be available for review. In each category, the higher the Marisol intake group always had more tics observed. Okay. And when I went back and I looked at the statistics, you can't just run a standard deviation. You can't run sophomore high school statistics on this. You have to do a more rigorous analysis. So I knew how many individuals were in the low intake group, how many individuals were in the high intake group. Okay. I knew what the number of tics was. I knew the average and standard deviation. Okay, so when analyzed correctly, all categories, total, male and female, of the children that were observed in these studies showed more motor and phonic tics in the higher intake group except for motor tics in boys. So five out of the six categories showed that the Marisol was associated with tics. So anyhow, the CDC cannot, just even the events of this last 2 weeks, the CDC cannot be relied upon to conduct any vaccine safety studies. They are a conflicted agency. Vaccine safety does not belong in the CDC. Vaccine surveillance, fine. If they want to surveil vaccine uptake, they can come to my house and find that we don't vaccinate. That's great. Okay, but the same agency that is in charge for pushing vaccine uptake and literally buying $4 billion worth of vaccines per year has no business whatsoever looking at vaccine safety. That is a complete conflict of interest. CDC should never be looking at vaccine safety, should be taken completely out of the CDC, if not out of the Department of Health and Human Services. Now, and although the CDC has studied, and I put this in quotes, the Marisol and MMR vaccine, because we see this sort of this hall, you know, this is the Hall of Fame. This is the Lifetime Achievement Award of dubious statistics. I have no other way to put it. Okay, there are so many flaws with these particular studies. They've neglected to look at the health effects of the entire vaccination schedule. Okay, the entire vaccination schedule is not based on the health of the child. It's based on getting as many vaccines early because they think that that's when they're going to be able to get babies in the well baby checkup appointment. So there's more and more inertia to get children more and more vaccines earlier. Okay, it is not based on the health of the child. Okay, it is based on a bloated vaccination schedule that's out of control. Okay, now, so everything is on the table. The entire vaccination schedule is on the table. Okay, and, you know, I did my top 10 take home. Here's, if you are interested in helping to take action, I would ask you to contact your own congressman, make sure that they're in touch with Congressman Daryl Issa to recommend hearings on CDC malfeasance in the Congressional Oversight Government Reform Committee, and let them know about the whistleblower. Let them know anything and everything. If you don't know what to let them know, email me. I will help you out to let them know. But this is a really, really opportune time to call for action to investigate what is going on in vaccine safety. So number one, we can know what happened to our kids, and number two, we can prevent further damage from future generations. Thank you so much.
It's Super September Savings at Redding Kia, home of the 10-year, 100,000-mile limited powertrain warranty, with 0.9% financing for up to 60 months on all 2015 Kia Optimas and Sorentos. Come and get them on approval of credit, subject to prior sale, plus government fees and taxes, any dealer documentation processing charge, and any emission testing fee. Finance offer through Kia Motors Finance ends October 1st, 2014. Redding Kia, Cypress Avenue, Redding, reddingkia.com. reddingkia.com.
Sierra Pacific Industries is proud to support our crew members, their families, and our local high school football teams. We look forward to watching your families grow over the years. Please enjoy the game and be safe before, during, and after. Let's keep our community safe, and together we can keep teams safe.
Sierra Pacific Industries has over 4,450 crew members and is a proud sponsor of North State Football. For more information on Sierra Pacific Industries and to see what jobs are available, visit their website at spi-ind.com.
Use your poker skills, put your cards into play, and play your way to victory. Go deep and take them down in the $30,000 Super Deep Stack Poker Tournament at Wind River Resort and Casino on Saturday, September 20th and Sunday the 21st at 10 a.m. Prize pool based on 200 participants. There's plenty of action in this two-day tournament. Your $320 buy-in will get you $20,000 in chips. A delicious Hawaiian lunch will be served. Book your seat now at the River Club or online at windriver.com. Stay with us in Redding, California's all-in-one luxurious destination. Reserve your room now and ask for your special room rate. Call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN. Wind River Resort and Casino is known for hosting the best poker tournaments in Northern California. So get your big stack, pull up a seat, and play in the $30,000 Super Deep Stack Poker Tournament at Wind River Resort and Casino. Prize pool based on 200 participants. We are a 100% smoke-free casino. It's better on the river.
Hi, Linda Bott here. Join me every Thursday night at 6 p.m. right here on KCNR 1460 AM for On the Spot with Linda Bott. Find out what's hot and what's not. We talk about fun, film, fashion, food. Brought to you by Dandelion, Crackmaster, Mount Shasta Mall. On the Spot, Thursday, 6 p.m. right here, KCNR 1460 AM. This Chamber of Commerce Minute is brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning.
Are you tired of worrying if your business will survive till the economy gets better? Worry no more. The Greater Reading Chamber of Commerce has the tools to help you with your small business. From valuable networking events to educational seminars, we are here in your community. People do business with people they know. Get closer to your future customers by joining the Reading Chamber of Commerce today. As a member, you will participate in referral programs, member-to-member discounts, free listing on the Chamber website, and your company name listed in our business directory with a distribution of 5,000 copies to potential customers. Call us at 225-4433 to find out how you can meet your new customers and build your business.
This moment's been brought to you by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, Professional Cleaning Services, 221-5868. Why not get the best?
Do you think that the government is going to take care of you?
Do you believe the government is telling you the truth?
Do you believe mainstream media is telling you the truth?
Do you believe unemployment has gone down?
Do you think that printing money out of thin air and charging interest on it is constitutional?
Do you think it's right to enslave the next generation with debt?
Do you believe that we are following the Constitution as intended by our founders?
Are you self-reliant?
Are you ready for the economic collapse that is coming? Do you want the truth?
Tune in to Sovereign Minds at a new time on Sunday at 10 a.m. right after We the People on AM 1460 KCNR.
Hailed by the New York Times as a cagey, emotional drama packed with plot twists, The Other Place follows a brilliant scientist as she unravels a 10-year-old mystery that leads her back to a Cape Cod beach house where a revelation awaits her. Directed by Donna Stobie and featuring Lisa Collins, John Welsh, Caitlin Kenyon, and Daniel Beckman, proceeds will benefit the Reading Walk to End Alzheimer's, September 26th through 28th at Old City Hall in Reading. Go to CascadeTheater.org for tickets and showtimes.
Right now at O'Reilly Auto Parts, pick up a 5-quart jug of O'Reilly Synthetic Motor Oil and a MicroGuard filter for $19.99. Keep your engine clean and improve fuel economy with a 5-quart jug of O'Reilly Synthetic Motor Oil and a MicroGuard filter for $19.99. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Limits apply. See store for details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Sierra Pacific Industries is proud to support our crew members, their families, and our local high school football teams. We look forward to watching your families grow over the years. Please enjoy the game and be safe before, during, and after. Let's keep our community safe, and together we can keep teens safe.
Sierra Pacific Industries has over 4,450 crew members and is a proud sponsor of North State Football. For more information on Sierra Pacific Industries and to see what jobs are available, visit their website at spi-ind.com.
Hello, folks. I'm here with our local hero, Bob the Drop from Mount Shasta Springwater. Bob, I want to thank you for all the support and good things that Mount Shasta Springwater does for our local communities.
You are welcome. And rest assured, we will continue to support our local friends and supply them with the best spring water in the world.
How can people get your great tasting spring water, Bob?
Just call us at 1-800-922-6227.
That's 1-800-922-6227?
Yes, for the healthiest, best tasting spring water in the world.
You're listening to KCNR 1460, the community radio of the North State. Go to KCNR1460.com or give us a call at 605-4567. It is currently 85 degrees, going to get up to a high of 99, low of 72 today. And Sunday is looking at a high of 96, low of 61. And Monday is going to be a high of 95, low of 68. You're listening to KCNR 1460 in Shasta, Redding, the community radio of the North State. Give us a call, 605-4567, or go online, kcnr1460.com.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Medical professionals overseeing an Omaha isolation unit say a doctor who became infected with Ebola while serving in Liberia is sick but stable. SimUSA President Bruce Johnson quotes from an email written by Dr. Rick Sekra.
To all of you at SIM and to my colleagues here in Liberia at Elwha Hospital, I apologize. You know, you see, Rick didn't want this to detract or disrupt any of the care of the patients at our Elwha Hospital in Monrovia.
And Sacra came down with Ebola while working in that hospital delivering babies. Also at SRNnews.com, after more than 4 months of bloodshed, a ceasefire in Ukraine's rebellious east largely held back fighting today, but appeared to be fragile as both sides of the conflict claimed the others had violated it. Meanwhile, a spokesman for the Ukrainian National Security Council, who you hear here, speaking today in Kyiv.